Good afternoon. My name is Bradley, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Lessons in Reducing Mortality Quest Top Performer conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. At this time, I will turn the call over to Ms. Carolyn Scott. You may begin your conference.
Thank you, Bradley, and Happy New Year to everyone for Premier here in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'd like to welcome you to today's Advisor Live titled Lessons in Reducing Mortality and Implementing Evidence-Based Care, Premier's Quest Top Performers. By way of background, we are having a little bit of technical difficulty with the presentation, so as soon as those slides are available, you'll be able to see them advance on your screen. By way of background, I'm a nurse, and I've been with Premier since May of this year. In my current role, I have oversight for the Quest initiative. In the short time I've been here, I've been greatly impressed by the work of these great hospitals, and I'm sure you will be as well at the conclusion of today's conference call. We have a diverse group of speakers and two case studies to guide today's discussion. Before I introduce the speakers, I'll review a few logistics. This program is a webinar, so you should be dialed in on the phone line as well as linked to the WebEx presentation on the computer. As I mentioned previously, you will soon see the slides advance once we have the technical difficulties completed. However, if you are on the clinical floor or elsewhere without access to a computer, have no fear. You should still be able to enjoy the discussion just from the phone. The PowerPoint presentation is also posted on the Advisor Live webpage at www.premierinc.com/advisorlive. This program is being recorded and will be posted to the same Advisor Live webpage within 48 hours. You'll receive an email immediately after the program with specific instructions on how to access all of today's materials as well as an evaluation form to give us your feedback. We will have approximately half an hour of presentation with the remaining time devoted to question answers for you. You may also submit questions at any time during the program through the chat feature on your screen. At this time, I'll ask our presenters to introduce themselves in the order in which they will speak. First, we have Dr. Richard Bankowitz from Premier.
Yes, hi. This is Dr. Richard Bankowitz. I'm Premier's Chief Medical Officer. I have been very active in Quest and continue to play a role in measurement and evaluation, and I'm glad to be with you this afternoon.
Thank you, Dr. Bankowitz. Now I'd like to introduce Gail Hicks from Northside Hospital and Johnson City Specialty Hospital.
Good afternoon. I'm Gail. I'm the Director of Nursing for Northside Hospital and Johnson City Specialty Hospital. I also have very much involved in our evidence-based care and our implementation of our appropriate care measures and oversee some of our other quality measures as well.
Thank you, Gail. And finally, I'd like to introduce Jan Matthews and congratulate Jan on her new role as Assistant Vice President at Caremont Health in Gaston Memorial Hospital.
Good afternoon. Yes, this is Jan, and certainly have been very much involved with not only the HQID program, but Quest, and elevating our quality to the next level. And I am a nurse and have been involved with quality my entire career, and certainly have enjoyed the interaction with Premier and this Quest program.
Great. Thank you, Jan. Now, at the conclusion of Jan's remarks, I'll provide a few to finish up the presentation for today. So with that being said, I will turn the time over to Dr. Bankowitz.
Thank you, Carolyn. I'd like to talk to all of you today on sort of a macro level about Quest before we get into the individual stories. Many of you know of the Premier CMS HQID demonstration project, which is now concluding its sixth year. The Quest initiative was built on the backbone of that framework. During the third year of that initiative, we were reaching the midpoint, and the Board of Premier asked us to consider how we could better prepare our members for a value-based purchasing world. As you know, HQAD focused on mostly process measures. There were some outcome measures added as well, But these were the process measures regarding evidence-based care that are by now quite familiar to everyone. Our board said, and we agreed, that in order to define value, that's very important, but you also need to look at other metrics. And so a group of the top performers in HQID, along with members of IHI and Premier and others in the healthcare industry, came together in Charlotte and defined the framework which we currently use for Quest. Quest uses a multidimensional framework consisting of five main value propositions, five main outcome measures. The first is the evidence-based medicine, which hasn't gone away, but we've added to that the hospital-wide risk-adjusted mortality, so we're trying to reduce the number of preventable deaths. We've also added the cost of care because the group believed that efficiency was going to be very important moving forward in defining value. We've also included a harm measure so we can evaluate how safe our institutions are becoming. And then lastly, a patient experience metric, because we think that in order to provide high-value care, you can't do that without providing a high patient experience. Those were the five main areas. The goal for Quest was to take each hospital and drive it toward top performance in each one of those five areas. And we asked our work groups to define top performance. We did it based on historical data, and for two of these, evidence-based care and mortality, we chose the top quartile of performance. For cost, because there was some degree of skepticism about how quickly cost would move, we chose the median of performance as the threshold. We are trying to move, over the course of 3 years, every hospital in Quest over the top performance threshold that was defined historically. So the goals are set, they're not moving, but all of our members are trying to get into the top performance threshold. Now the other two measures, the harm measure and the patient experience, are being added this year. We have finalized a harm index. We're using our HCAHPS scores to define the patient experience. We have not yet defined what will be the top performance measurement, but that's coming. And so by the end of the process, we'll have all five measures in play. I think it's important, just before I talk about the results, to tell you that this is a true collaborative. Everybody can win, and a big part of Quest is sharing the successes, sharing what works and what doesn't work, and letting people learn from each other. So that is the whole point. Driving people to top performance through a combination of sharing knowledge and also sharing data. We're completely open and transparent with our data within Quest. It provides a friendly competition because no one wants to be seen at the bottom of the quartile. And so it provides what we would call in the IHI framework the will. We've got lots of will in Quest now because everyone's looking at the data. We also have lots of ideas, which is the second part of that framework. Those ideas get shared in many ways, and some of them you'll hear about today. And then execution. We are providing an execution framework to help our participants reach that target. Now, is it working? I think we've had some tremendous success in the first year alone. In the first year alone, and if we had the slides up, you would see our lovely turnip plots that are styled after the Dartmouth Atlas. But we have taken this cohort in evidence-based care. And remember, the top performance threshold was set at the top quartile. That threshold was 84% of an all-or-nothing score. So if you were delivering each and every one of the measures to which the patient was entitled, you would succeed. If you missed one, you would be counted as a failure. The threshold was to get that right 84% of the time. 25% of our hospitals were there at the start. After 1 year, we had over 71% above that top threshold line, which was a huge increase. The the average score increased 8.74%, but I don't think that's the really important number. I think the more important number is most of that cohort now has moved over the top performance threshold, and if you were able to see this on the screen, you'd see that the variation has really narrowed. So what was looking like at first a big gyroscope has flattened out like an old-fashioned spinning top, very, very narrow variation. We've had similar success with mortality. And in mortality, once again, we set the bar at the top quartile. That happened to be a hospital-wide risk-adjusted O-to-E mortality ratio of 0.82, which we thought was fairly aggressive. 1.0 would have been what was expected by the statistical models. 0.82 was what the better performers were able to do. As it turned out, after 1 year, we went from 25% of our hospitals being there to almost 50%. So 49% were over that line. Once again, we went from a gyroscope to more of a spinning top, and we reduced the average O to E across the whole cohort by 0.14. So huge movement in both evidence-based care and also the mortality. Now, with cost, we had a little more complicated issues. We decided we'd break this down into four cohorts by size and by teaching status. And so we had four different goalposts. But the bottom line is we did have some movement, and on an inflation-adjusted basis, the cost was reduced by $343 per case mix adjusted discharge across the cohort, which is really fantastic in an era when we're talking about bending the cost curve. This group was able to show a reduction in an inflation-adjusted case mix-adjusted cost per discharge, and at the same time as showing huge improvements in evidence-based care and in risk-adjusted hospital-wide mortality. Our speakers are going to discuss a little bit about how they did that, and you'll hear a little more on the ground, but that's the macro setting for Quest. And now I'd like to turn this over to Gail Hicks from Mountain States Health Alliance.
Good afternoon. I'm talking to you today from Northside Hospital. And if you can see the slides, we have a picture of our Northside Hospital, which is an acute care hospital that provides a full range of acute care and skilled nursing service. If you can see us today, we're covered in snow, and our temperature is in the teens here in East Tennessee. The next slide that I have is to tell you a little bit about our hospital. We're one of a 14 hospital system. We're the largest regional integrated healthcare delivery system, with covering 29 counties in the 4-state region. We're also a charter Quest participant. The very next slide shows how vast an area that our healthcare system covers. It's a gorgeous slide, and I hope you'll be able to see that. But for today's purposes, we're going to be talking to you about how Northside Hospital approaches mortality in evidence-based care or our appropriate care scores. Our strategies for mortality have included our rapid response team and finding that right team. And today our rapid response team is composed of our emergency room department staff along with an ED physician. We focused on education and awareness with our rapid response team, and each of our team members today have a laminated badge card that outlines the protocol for calling a rapid response. We also provide mock sessions to help us maintain our skill and knowledge of that protocol. We've also looked at the appropriate placement of our patients in the ICU, and we have focused on being able our documentation and our coding of our palliative care versus in comfort care versus those who are receiving treatment. We also use the mortality drill down report that Quest provides us to find our small windows of opportunity. In the next slide, hopefully you can see I included a copy of a reporting tool that we use here at Northside. We use for reporting our rapid response and our codes. We provide this information at our monthly critical care committee meeting. Also, we discuss this at our nursing practice and quality. We have a physician that reviews the charts of all codes outside the ICU, and he also looks at our rapid responses. We use that information then to drill down and provide or identify the educational opportunities that we need to provide. I hope you can see the next slide because it does show how we are doing here at Northside with our mortality, our Quest mortality indices. We have showed a steady decline. We're well below the threshold for our expected mortality rate. Moving over to our evidence-based care or appropriate care, we have a picture of our team, and this is a multi-interdisciplinary team. We meet every Tuesday morning. We review our core measures or our appropriate care scores and measures. We look, our two top diagnoses here at Northside are community-acquired pneumonia and congestive heart failure. We have an opportunity at these meetings to discuss specific patients. We're very fortunate also to have a concurrent reviewer who sits with us. She can provide us with the updates in our care measures, but she also can give us real-time opportunities that we have that we may be able to address while the patient is still in-house with us. We have morning bed huddles. We have color-coded chart spines. All this is to aid us and other disciplines in helping us monitor that evidence-based care. We also provide, we have an interdisciplinary rounding team here that rounds with patients and families, and this also helps us as we discuss our appropriate care or evidence-based care to make sure we're meeting those measures. We also we have a slide that shows how well we've done with those appropriate care scores. And from FY07, we've gone from a 70% to almost a 90% improvement. We've included today our Quest report for the quarter, our second quarter of 09, and it does show that Northside, again, is a top performer in evidence-based care, cost of care, and mortality. We've reached those top quartile in all three of those categories. Our congestive heart failure is one of our appropriate care scores that we monitor. We are currently at a 96% compliance with those measures, 4%. We feel like we have an opportunity at looking at our discharge instructions, our discharge measures. We also have a health system-wide collaborative that's looking at medication reconciliation at discharge to help with that as well. Again, we've reached 96% compliance, but we still have some work to do. We still have that 4% window. In our community-acquired pneumonia, we're 96.7. We've met that measure at 96.7%, 3.3. We've unsuccessful. With this measure, we're continuing to work on antibiotic selection and timing. We do have order sets that have been developed to help us with this, and we have seen an increase in physician use with our order sets. With our pneumonia appropriate care scores, our evidence-based care, we've gone from a little below 70 to above 90% in the last couple of years. Of course, our goal is to reach 100%. We're looking for hard stops to help us put things in place to help our frontline team members provide this evidence-based care. And we feel that our appropriate care team has really been served us well in that regard. This team also looks at any opportunity where we feel that we can change a process or redesign a process to help us meet those measures. The last slide that I have to talk about today that I put on the slide presentation, and I hope you can see this. This is a picture of Franklin Woods Community Hospital. This spring, Northside Hospital and Johnson City Specialty Hospital will be closed. Our acute care units will be closing and moving over to this new facility. This is Franklin Woods Community Hospital. This will be our first green hospital in Tennessee, and we're very proud to be a part of this. And as we continue to focus on our appropriate care and evidence-based care, we fully intend to take these improvements and work towards reaching our goals over at Franklin Woods Community Hospital. And thank you all very much. I hope that you were able to see the slides as I talk through. Thank you.
Thank
now
you.
Now we're going to introduce Janice. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, from Gastonia. And she's going to be talking to us about sepsis today. Thank you, Janice.
All right, thank you. Yes, Jan Matthews from Gaston Memorial Hospital, and sounds like we've got snow in Tennessee, but in Charlotte, North Carolina, and we are just about 10 miles south of Charlotte, we have very, very cold temperatures, and the last I saw, my pansies in the backyard are asking for sweaters. It's colder than it's ever been. So I'd like to just spend just a few minutes talking to you about how our hospital focused on Quest and actually why we decided to go into the Quest initiative. We have been a part of the HQID program since its inception in 2003 and certainly have improved in all areas to close to 100% across the board. But yet that wasn't enough. If you're looking at value-based health, you as Dr. Bankowitz mentioned, you have to really look at more of a 360, looking at the cost of care, decreasing mortality, decreasing harm, and also making a patient experience that will make them feel like an individual. So Quest allowed us to really move to that next level of quality. But today, I want to talk to you about what we did in our first year. I think the slide will come up in just a second. Basically, when we started the Quest program out, we were in the top quartile for evidence-based care and cost of care. But you can see on the slide we were at a 0.94 and our OE ratio for decreasing avoidable mortality. So the Quality Performance Council and all of the multidisciplinary teams decided to focus, obviously, on reducing avoidable mortality. And the Board of Directors gets very involved with quality at our hospital and helped us to design what that aim statement would be. The next slide shows that our aim statement really was to reduce avoidable mortality to an OE ratio of 0.84, which would have gotten us into the top quartile. Now, what was that going to take? We really needed to look at a multidisciplinary focus on where did we need to focus on mortality and what patient populations would help us to attain that aim goal. So how to start, the next slide really shows, and I'm sure all of you are involved with this type of engaging multidisciplinary teams, making sure you have a physician champion, making sure your data is accurate. But we went one step further, and if you can go on to the next slide, we utilized the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, moving your dot concept, that methodology, as we have been for many years reviewing all of our mortality and trying to implement strategies that will help us in that area. So if you go to the next slide, you can. This is just a copy. If you're not involved with the Institute of Healthcare Improvement, basically they can give you information. It's a little bit dated information as to where your hospital falls within this mortality ratio. So if you'll move to the next slide, I'm just going to spend just a second describing what this means. This matrix goes through the ICU, non-ICU, whether it's comfort care or treatment measures. So in other words, is your patient in the ICU comfort care or is it in the ICU patient in the ICU for treatment measures? If they're in the non-ICU for comfort care or for treatment measures. Obviously, you don't want to utilize your ICU beds for comfort care if they would better be housed in a different area. So that's a quick snippet of the IHI matrix and how we look at our mortality at Gaston Memorial Hospital. So what did we decide to do? To develop an action plan, and that started in February of 2007 and through January of 2008 and continues. We wanted to evaluate admission discharge criteria, making sure those beds were available. And if you think about that, that our ICU beds are available so that those critical needs patients don't have to be held in the ED waiting for a bed. To continue to enhance our rapid response team, our quality of life team is in place throughout the hospital, but we saw that there were opportunities to include that team more liberally in the ICU. Beginning multidisciplinary rounds in critical care, stroke team development, and sepsis, which is where I want to focus today, early goal-directed therapy for sepsis. This graphic just shows what our primary components were. I've just gone through those. And then some of the elements that the secondary components, kind of what we did to address these different elements. And I won't go through that in interest of time, but certainly you can see we are going to focus today's talk on sepsis. Why sepsis? Well, across the nation, you know that mortality with septic shock and severe sepsis is attains over 90%, 90,000 deaths a year, or 45% mortality. And at Gaston Memorial Hospital, sepsis is our number one mortality. This is a Pareto chart that just basically says what I just talked about, which is where would our biggest opportunity lie when trying to reduce avoidable mortality, and certainly it is in the septic patient population, or we could attain possibly a huge reduction in avoidable mortality if we were able to focus on that early goal-directed therapy. And again, this actually slide I was able to take to our multidisciplinary team and the emergency department, because 85% of our patients with sepsis come through the emergency department, and they were a key element to the buy-in of making sure that antibiotics were started quickly and that the therapy, the goal-directed therapy was initiated with fluid, et cetera. This certainly shows that the longer you wait to get your antibiotics on board, the mortality for severe sepsis increases dramatically. And certainly this was a great graphic to show to our physicians and to our clinicians in the emergency department and throughout the hospital. So, what did we do? And I like to say that, you know, whenever you design a plan, it's got to be a perfect plan because we designed it. Education was important, that sepsis education to not only our physicians through our weekly CME. We provided several opportunities in our monthly nursing perspectives. Our intensivist, Dr. Fricker, presented there. The order set development, which has been a strategy of our hospital to be developed by our physicians and our clinicians, our clinical nurse specialists, but the buy-in from the physicians comes a lot easier if they're involved on how that looks and how it's set up and how the ease that they have to be able to utilize it. And so the order sets were developed, and the orders were developed in the emergency department to allow our very busy, we see over 100,000 visits in our emergency department, to be able to concentrate on sepsis and get that early goal-directed therapy initiated. So you can go on through. We did lots of education. And so after that first initial implementation and the education and the order sets, and our goal live goal was on July the 15th, and guess what? We absolutely attained that. We made our goal. But after studying concurrent data on a monthly basis, we saw that we were not making much improvement. So like anything else, you learn as much from those early implementation strategies as by failure as you do by succeeding. And so many of the elements certainly were successful, but we knew we needed to go back to the drawing board. Our sepsis committee meets on a monthly basis. We look at our data. We drill down into certain, are able to drill down into certain patient populations that may give us a better look at those patients, and then we strategize how we can improve. I'm just going to go through a couple of these that were really, if you could go back to that slide, the slide before. Yes. The implementation of the MedHost, it was an alert that really what it did was it spurred the UCCs in the emergency department to get that order set on the inpatient admission, so that it wasn't, we found that many times that order set wasn't in place, and so our hospitalists would utilize a generic order set and would miss things. The elevated lactate levels in the emergency department was one of our, I think one of our strategies that we implemented that gave us the biggest success, and the fact that if they drew lactates, which is on their order set, so they draw lactates, if the patient comes in with signs and symptoms of sepsis, a lactate level is drawn. If it's elevated, then early goal-directed therapy is initiated, and our hospitalists were given pocket cards. We distributed those throughout the emergency department as well. And did a lot more education, but the actual signs and symptoms of sepsis have well been educated throughout the hospital. In fact, with our nursing assessment and every 8-hour assessment, there is an option that they have to go through to see whether or not their patient meets any of the elements of sepsis. And if they do, it directs them what they need to do, which is to contact the physician if the order set is not in place and that early goal-directed therapy has not been initiated. So you can go on to the next slide. This slide, basically, I can tell you that statistically, I cannot definitely say we are making a huge improvement, but you can certainly see that our mortality rates for sepsis have decreased dramatically, and we are capturing those patients much more quickly. In fact, we have just initiated any time a culture is ordered on a patient in the emergency department, a lactate level is drawn. Even if they've not been identified as a septic patient, if the doctor has ordered a culture, lactic acid levels are drawn at that very same time. So we truly anticipate that we are making an improvement and decreasing avoidable mortality for our septic patients. This basically shows those Dr. Bankowitz had shown, but I wanted to kind of show you where we were. We were at a 0.92 below that line in the turnip graph, and I'm not sure if you'd seen those graphs, but basically then after implementation and at the first year, we are up above and certainly made a huge improvement. The next slide shows that. So these are the turnip graphs he was referring to. Go to the next slide. And this basically shows that we, and I've circled an arrow showing you that we went from a 0.92 to a 0.70, which is the OE ratio, and certainly made improvement. Now, was it just the elements that we had put into place during this time period? I certainly think that that made a great improvement. Our sepsis mortality has decreased, as you could see, but all of the quality elements from HQID and making sure that our patients receive evidence-based care and that we're making sure that every patient that comes to our hospital is treated in exactly the same manner. Certainly all of those things have helped us to improve and reduce avoidable mortality. This graphic actually shows the Quest hospitals, and you may see another a view of this, but the green line shows the Quest hospitals on reducing avoidable mortality in comparison with the non-Quest hospitals or our other HQID hospitals. And certainly the mortality rate has decreased from 2006 through 2008, but the Quest hospitals are showing a little bit faster reduction of that avoidable mortality. The next slide shows where we have been from 2004 down to 2009 on overall hospital mortality. And I think that may be our last slide, if you'll move on. I think that's our last slide. Certainly the quality initiatives here at Gaston Memorial Hospital have been improved, and the excitement of finding that next project to help with the care of our patients is among the entire staff here at the hospital. We want to make sure that that value-based care is given here at Gaston.
Great. Thank you so much for your comments, Jan. For the next few minutes, it appears that we're having a little bit more technical difficulty, so I will begin to talk through just a few other slides that may or may not appear on your screen, but kind of provides more information about how we are planning for the future for our Quest members. One of the slides you've seen repeatedly throughout this presentation is our framework for high-value healthcare, which depicts the various domains of Quest. And if you think about those domains, they really begin to assess quality through the lens of various stakeholders, patients, providers, the government, stakeholder that you would care to think of can view quality through one of those lenses. And it's very clear that if we were going to be successful, if our hospitals were going to be successful in Quest, that we had to have a way to measure and engage senior leaders in the process, because we know that you cannot manage what you don't measure, and we know without leadership engagement, without their commitment, we would be unable to show lasting, sustainable change. In a slide that you'll see in the deck at the conclusion of the presentation, what we've done is shown how we have aligned Quest with the goals of value-based purchasing. We know that value-based purchasing is spoken of frequently in the various healthcare reform proposals, and when you look at the various goals as outlined in the report to Congress, each of the domains that are mentioned within the paper are also covered in Quest in terms of addressing clinical quality, overuse, misuse, and underuse, patient-centered care, reducing adverse events, and improving safety, avoiding unnecessary costs, making performance results transparent and usable by the consumers. And by following these various tenets, we know that changes are occurring in processes of care, and there are elimination of existing disparities that exist today. Also in that report to Congress, there were various measures that were proposed, areas of measurement, and within Quest, we're already measuring each and every one of those. So we feel that by doing so, our hospitals are better prepared for what will eventually come out of the legislation that exists. Also within the slide deck, we have provided more information around how we support members through our collaborative activities. We know to be successful, for our hospitals to be successful, for there to be adequate knowledge transfer, we knew we had to engage and align with them. And we do this in several ways. One is through national meetings, and we bring Quest membership together in face-to-face meetings twice per year. We also engage in 90-day improvement activities, which we call sprints, which often focus on a single measure that through the data we know if there's improvement in that measure, it'll push many of the more hospitals above that top performance threshold, or sometimes we focus on a group of measures, a bundle of measures, if you will. We also have collaboratives within Quest. These are 6 to 9 month improvement initiatives focused on a specific condition or a disease state or a process of care. So some sprints, if you will, that we have in process now or will soon launch, deal with topics such as catheter-associated UTIs, VTE administration for the surgical patient population, cost of care, central line-associated bloodstream infections, and some around patient experience. We have a 6 to 9 month collaborative going on right now around sepsis. We'll be launching one soon for perinatal harm, one soon on end-of-life care and palliative care, and a more in-depth one on cost of care. There's some other ways that we engage members as well. As previously mentioned, we are strategic partners with IHI, and they advise us and engage us throughout this Quest process. We are a strategic partner with the American College of Cardiology and IHI and their hospital-to-home readmissions project. And we also provide ongoing education calls as needed to assist our members. Quest participants have access to our performance improvement portal where there are literally housed thousands and thousands of documents which allow for knowledge transfer to occur. And it also allows for organizations to download presentations, order sets, other types of documents that would be helpful in their improvement efforts, and to involve in information exchange through the asking of questions or providing responses to questions that exist on the portal. Our collaborative offerings are provided through a 12-month calendar, so our members are able to pick and choose those topics for which they would like to participate. And finally, we have clinical directors that are assigned to each of our participating hospitals to help not only in the advancement of their overall improvement strategies during the 3-year Quest journey, but to also help them in their interim goals, which are reassessed every 6 months. At the outset of Quest, we had around 160 hospitals, and during 2009, we added to the membership of hospitals that were participating in the initiative, and we now have close to 200, which treat approximately 2.3 million patients in 35 different states. Research has shown us that these hospitals treat about 6% of all patient discharges in last calendar year. So with that being said, I'll stop there so that we'll have some time for questions by the group. Bradley, could you please explain how people can ask questions?
Yes, ma'am. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster.
Bradley, while that is going place, I received a question on the chat line, and I'd like to pose that now. Jan, I believe this question is for you. It was regarding the quality of life team. What members of your staff currently compose that team?
We have a coordinator of that quality of life team, and she has clinicians that are involved with that. Our one of our hospital lead hospitalists also is involved with that, and they give presentations. They certainly talk with different physician groups talking about what services they can provide in initiating that quality of life consult, which will allow our patients at the end of life to have a more concentrated effort on their needs at that time.
Great, thank you. Bradley, have there been any questions submitted?
Yes, we have our first question from the line of Tangela Kraft of Wayne Memorial Hospital.
Good afternoon, Tangela.
Actually, this question is from Steve Brush, our
documentation specialist here at Wayne. We also are working with the coders here, and even using our association websites and through peer discussions, I'm having a hard time finding out what exactly the impact of this V66.7 code is. Could you remark regarding its impact on the Premier data or how it's collected on publicly reported data? Do you know the impact of this V66.7 code?
I can talk from Gaston Memorial Hospital or Caremont Health. We basically, in the data that I showed you, we did not engage in that V66 code. I believe it started in October of 2008, and it wasn't until about July of 2009 that we actually started utilizing it. And basically, if the patient has comfort care only indicated, then the professional coders can code that, and that is then those patients are no longer a part of our mortality. Now, the way we handle it with our sepsis patients, we don't include those in our data on mortality for sepsis, and the reason why is that we would like to make sure that there, if there were any opportunities early on in their care, so that they wouldn't have gotten to that comfort care only, we wanted to make sure not to miss that. So, in other words, all of our data on sepsis, we don't utilize that. I hope that helped with your question.
Yes, ma'am. Do you know, in terms of reporting for, like, the Premier level, when you say that it did not count towards your mortality if they were hospice or palliative care only, do you know if that's, like, universally true, that if we have this diagnosis code placed appropriately for a hospice patient in the inpatient setting, would that not count as a mortality if they then died in the inpatient setting?
I don't know who wants to answer that. It is my understanding that if V66 is that code is on your chart for that patient from a hospital, excuse me, from nationwide mortality ratio, those patients are not included. Is that your understanding?
That's true of Northside also.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Yes, underutilized is what the problem is. Okay.
Well, yeah, we did. We definitely did. And then our mortality, the committee that looks at mortality, said, okay, that's very important. We want to make sure that we're coding appropriately, obviously. And we have a documentation specialist group as well that looks at documentation. But we didn't want to say, okay, let's forget about those patients, because there were still opportunities that, that we may have been able to affect early on with their care, so they never got to that point.
Huge. Thank you so much.
Your next question comes from the line of Bernie Munigan of Healthcare IT News.
Hi, this is Bernie Munigan from Healthcare IT News. I have two questions to the extent that you can answer them. I know you've touched on both of these items. Each of you have touched on these items. One, my first question is, what role does information technology play in achieving these goals that you've described today? And my second question is, what generally is the correlation between achieving these goals or getting closer to them in bending that cost curve that you were talking about? Does it become, do you save money by doing this as well as sort of an aside benefit?
I can speak again from Caremont Health. As far as information technology, certainly it is essential. And the more we're kind of in flux from paper to computer, but in order to make changes in quality, you need to have concurrent data. And the work that we have with Premier has been absolutely phenomenal to provide us the data that we need to be able to be successful and to say that this strategy that we used did make a difference. So the use of information technology as we become more and more attuned with implementing total electronic documentation and providing that database of wealth of information and data, it's essential. As far as achieving the goals, certainly by decreasing mortality, all of the quality, the data, all of the quality things that we've done at our hospital, the ultimate outcome has been decreasing costs, because if you become more effective and provide better quality, your overall outcome is going to be decreasing costs, and that's what we've seen at our hospital.
Great. Thank you. That's perfect. Thanks. And this was Jan, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Greg Donovan of Pikeville Medical Center.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to ask a question and a great presentation from everyone. And I, too, in the eastern part of Kentucky, understand snow and cold at the moment as well. but just a question I get, a quick one for Jan regarding on your septus lactate level. Are you looking at greater than 2, greater than 4? What level are you using for a trigger?
We are using greater than 2. Well, we originally had bumped that up, and it was greater, I believe, than 3. But the physicians in the emergency department, this has been so exciting to me, because as we move forward in these monthly meetings, the doctors are challenging. They are talking back and forth during the month. Okay, you know, we missed this patient. Here's a case study. We should have done this. And so to get that lactate level a little bit lower, they really feel like they're doing a better job of identifying those septic patients and taking care of their needs quickly.
Okay. I also had another little question for Gail on your concurrent reviewer for the evidence-based measures. How do you utilize that at your facility? How does that work?
Is
it like Monday through Friday, every day? How's that done?
Yes, she does concurrent reviews on a daily basis. But when we come together on a weekly basis, then we're able to, as a team, we're able to look at her findings, and then the opportunity that we can take from that, what we want to work on. And I think I mentioned a couple of things, our antibiotic timing. Now, this is something that she brings back to us at the meeting, and then we're able to maybe turn the focus to that. It helps to look at real-time, as Jan mentioned just a few moments ago, it's that real-time concurrent information that gives you an opportunity to act on measures that perhaps you otherwise you just don't pick up. Not in a timely manner anyway.
They're out on like in the ED or out on the floors, and they have like some kind of trigger or work list that they're able to see that these patients this day have shortness of air, pneumonia, other working diagnoses, I guess, that they can go out and follow up on?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and we talk about, we have an opportunity to look at that too in our rounding process. We have an ICU rounding process with a physician champion, where we're able to pick up on if perhaps maybe an evidence-based care measure that we need to address. If we can pick up on any type of trends, we can identify it as we're rounding. That helps us as well.
Is it just one concurrent reviewer for
diseases or
the evidence-based measures? How do you staff it there?
Yes, that's
just
correct.
Just one?
We have one.
This is Janet Gaston. We have the same type of position, although they're involved in the design of the multidisciplinary teams as well, but I have one for AMI, one for pneumonia, one for the skip measures, and one for heart failure, so that they're out there on the floors working with the physicians, working with the clinicians, and also involved in the monthly multidisciplinary teams.
Excellent. Like, Jan, where you have one kind of by each of the areas, is that full-time as far as 24-7 or just through the week, or how does that work?
It is. We basically have they are full-time employees, and then on the weekend I have a weekend option person that is able to look at those patients that come in over the weekend in any one of those patient populations. And so it basically we looked at the number of patients that we had for each one of those diagnoses and made sure that we were utilizing their time appropriately. One of the things that our AMI individual does is she does the HOP measures and then it's the pneumonia individual also works with psych on the psychiatric core measure. So we've kind of expanded that a little bit, but in essence it's one FTDE, and then we have the weekend option person, which has been a lifesend to really make sure that we don't miss somebody over the weekend.
Great, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Bradley, this is Carolyn Scott. I know we've exceeded our 2 o'clock time frame, and we got started a little late because of the technical difficulties. Why don't we take one more question, and then we'll wrap up for the day.
Okay, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And there are no further questions at this time.
Great. That brings us to the end of our time today. I want to thank the speakers and thanks to everyone on the line for participating and hanging in while we had those technical difficulties. Please check your email for a link to a short survey about today's program and information on accessing the audio recording of today's call. We would love for you to join us again and tell your peers about this series. Remember, Advisor Live is open to anyone at no charge. Our next program is January 20th, and the title is How a Patient Data Breach Can Drain Hospital Finances and Ruin Your Reputation. Take care, everybody. Thanks again, and goodbye from Premier.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.